You know what just happened? So, oh, hey, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Jay Speaker, journalistically speaking. Thank you for being here. I just did something that I kind of didn't want to do, but I felt like I had to do. And let me explain it to you. I just had an interview with somebody who is a former IDF intel officer, Zionist to the core, defends his position as a defender, by the way, not just of Israel or the people of Israel, but of the Netanyahu government. I guess you could argue he is a bit of a hardliner, to say the very least. And I felt like I had to go toe to toe with him. I don't like doing loud, confrontational, screaming interviews where people talk over each other. I see a lot of those, and I'm just not a fan. I think we can have even conversations with people we disagree with. At the same time, if you guys watch what I do, what I say, how I analyze the geopolitics in our world. And I have consistently been very critical of Israel, as I am very critical of Israel for what it has just done in Doha, because I don't understand. I don't understand how you can say you want to settle something with someone and blow them up. I don't understand that. I don't understand how you can tell somebody you want to negotiate with them and then kill them. I don't understand. I don't. Sorry. I don't understand how you can feel like you have the temerity to bomb another country simply because they've invited your opponents to have a conversation at your whim, because apparently your government said, please invite them and we'll talk. And the US apparently talked them into doing. I don't understand. I don't understand. Obviously, I don't understand why the United States would say that they gave these folks a fair warning when they obviously did not give them a warning. That would be like saying that if somebody told me that they're about to blow up my house, I would call my family and have dinner. No, I'd be out the door. Why would they be having a meeting if they were told that that there was a bomb going to hit that building? Come on. Common sense. Not to mention the prime minister of Qatar has already come out and said that's bullshit, right? He said they called us 10 minutes after the bombing. But this conversation is not about just that incident. It's about the whole thing with Israel. And I walk away and I present this now to you, my conversation with Mordechai Kadar. In the spirit that even though there was a lot of hate, and there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of aggression, right? That I miss the fact that this thing could be and should be about at some point agreement, love, and I just don't see the hope for it. It's hard to walk away from a conversation like this and see even a sliver of possibility that it can move in that direction because of what denialism is happening as a result of this. So, look. Tell me what you think. Watch it. I want you to see it. I want you to feel it. I want you to look at my expression, look at his expression, because we were going toe to toe. Here it is, my conversation with a former chief intel officer from the IDF, a gentleman who is a rabid Zionist, no doubt, and who defends his point of view amid my challenges. Here he is, Mordechai Kadar.
I want to welcome my guest now because we need to have a serious conversation about this because obviously it's a serious topic, but the world is a little crazy these days. Dr. Mordechai Kadar, he is an Israeli scholar of Arab culture, a retired Israeli military intelligence lieutenant colonel, high rank to say the very least, and he's good enough to join us now. Thank you, sir, for taking time to talk to us.
Pleasure and honor.
Hey, I'm wondering, how can help me understand how this attack shows that Israel really wants a negotiated solution to this problem with the Palestinians, because what it tells me is they don't want a negotiated solution. And when I say this, of course, I'm talking about the Israeli government. I'm not talking about you, the Israeli people who I adore, or Israel in general.
The Israeli government tries for over 700 days of bloody war to convince the ISIS named Hamas to leave the Gaza Strip after they destroyed it. to leave to release the hostages, and everything was in vain. All the negotiations. What do you expect? That after 705 days they will start negotiating seriously? These Hamas ISIS people are they don't want to negotiate. They want to hold the hostages forever in order to squeeze our emotions and to destroy Israel at the end of the day. Don't you know this?
June 22nd, Netanyahu rejected a Hamas proposal to end the war and release more than 100 captives held by the group in exchange for a withdrawal of Israeli forces, the release of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, and recognition of Hamas governance over Gaza. That's Netanyahu being given a deal that Hamas agreed to release the 100 hostages, and he said no. Wait, I have more for you.
Okay, let me tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
The main point in this Hamas offer is that Hamas remain in power in Gaza.
Uh-huh.
Would anyone with little bit of mind allow such a thing after what they did to us on the 7th of October, 2023, after they burned our children, after they raped our girls, after they killed over 1,000 Israelis? Would you allow such an organization live near in your neighborhood?
Well, I would. So if it, I would. Yes, I would. If it meant the release of 100 people who I loved and cared for, and this opposition who I don't like for ego reasons or whatever, and this is the guy I have to deal with, I will deal with him because I want those 100 people to be free. I don't want them to die. That's why.
Well, apparently your criteria of how to live are different from our criteria. You know, we are more than sure, and they don't even try to hide it, that if they stay in power in Gaza, the next 7th of October is only a matter of time. So who with the right mind, assuming that you have right mind, allow such a thing?
Here's the thing. The world doesn't believe that Israel is really interested in anything other, based on its actions, than ridding.
Are you the world?
No, I'm certainly. Well, I'll tell you who the world is. And the assertion that I'm making to you, with all due respect, sir, is the following: the Israelis essentially want to get rid of the Palestinians. That's at the root of what they're doing. And negotiating a deal with Hamas or doing anything with Hamas simply gets in the way of that. I've heard that from Smoltrich. I've heard that from Mr. Netanyahu. Here it is. Here's the article. Let me read something to you real quick. Gaza will be entirely destroyed, says the Israeli government minister. Mr. Smoltrich goes on to say that they will have to leave in great numbers to third countries. The rest, forget about, raising fears of ethnic cleansing in the area. These are government officials. This is not some angry guy in the street who's saying this.
Well, apparently you forgot what happened on October 7th. With the people who attacked us were not only the Hamas fighters, which are actually people from Gaza. Also, old people came, even one with a cane came to rape girls. You know, he still can't do it. Okay, so who would you leave in Gaza after the... But let me ask you, what would Russia did in Chechnya in the 90s because of what happened in Chechnya? How many Chechens were destroyed, killed, murdered? How many women were raped by the Russian army in those days in the 90s? Okay, so a little bit, respect to a nation which wants to live, I would expect from you. However,
Don't get me wrong, and don't play this game with me where you're going to accuse me of being Hamas or something like that, because you know that I'm not, and you know that I think what happened on October 7th was horrible. It was terrible, just like any crime of that magnitude would be terrible.
So would you leave them? Would you leave them?
No, but I would have to.
So this is why we are talking about my friend, the problem exactly?
My friend Mordecai, there has to be some level of parity in the reaction. To say that Israel has not gone beyond 100 times what anything that Hamas did on that day would be ludicrous. We are all seeing the pictures of dead children every single day. That's got to hurt you as a father and grandfather. It has to.
You missed the chances.
Yes.
Listen, apparently your memory is not as good as ours.
Okay.
We allowed Hamas to establish a state as of June 2007 when they took Gaza over from the PA.
Encourage them.
They worked with us.
Yeah.
We allowed thousands of Gazans to come every single day into Israel to work and to bring food home. We supplied them with food, with whatever they needed. What did they do with this? They attacked us. They deceived us. And you know what? Let me tell you something. There was an organization on the way to recuperation. This was the name of the organization here in Israel. It's in Hebrew. And these good people were coming every single day to the Erez crossing to take Gazans to hospitals in Israel to be treated. And they waited for them for free. And they waited for them and they brought them back to Gaza because otherwise those people would not be able to come to the hospitals in Israel. These good people were the first to be slaughtered. You know why? Because those Gazans knew their names and they knew wherever they where they live, and they invaded their homes and they slaughtered them before anything, before anybody else on October 7th. So what can you say about this?
I'll tell you what I'll say about
that. My dear friend
Mordecai, those people you described as Gazans, are they not Israelis?
In Gaza, no.
The people who are living, the Palestinians, are not allowed to consider themselves part of the Israeli experience?
They are not citizens of Israel. They are not residents. They don't even want to be in Israel, and they want to destroy Israel. So what exactly do you ask?
What I'm asking is, these are people who, for many, many decades, felt like they were part of that region. We could go back in history and argue about who the land belongs to, but I don't want to get there because that's like doing that in America with Native Americans as well. But they feel like they have been put in that place, and they describe it as a concentration camp. They describe it as a place where they have to have permission just to be able to get outside, where they're locked into that area.
Mr. Chuck, please stop this nonsense.
Please.
We gave them, listen,
yes.
in the end of the 90s, the Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, gave them in Gaza a gas field for free, which we found and belongs to us. We gave them a gas field, and the company, British Gas, was ready to send and whatever needed in order to make them richer than Dubai.
Yeah.
Okay. What did they do with this? What did they do? They never agreed with the British guys who will take the money, whether it will be the PA or Hamas. And this is why they don't have gas until this very day. We gave it to them for free. And they could be richer, more like Singapore. And they don't, because they live in jihad. And listen to what they say. I speak Arabic. I believe you don't.
No, I don't.
I listen to them. And you know what? Look at this. This is their flag. This is the flag, the Palestinian flag. And this is the map of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Israel. So where is Israel, according to their discourse?
Well,
where exactly is Israel? In the sea, within the sharks.
Yeah.
And you defend them? And this is the plan?
I'm not here to defend anybody. I'm here to call
and
out.
And their mufti.
I'm here to.
And their mufti.
Yes.
Listen.
Yes.
And their mufti, Haj Amir al-Husseini, took part in the extermination of the Jews of Hungary in 1944. He recruited Muslims from Bosnia and Herzegovina to guard the bridges which took the Jews from Budapest to Auschwitz. And this was the participation of the Palestinians in the Holocaust. Apparently, you don't know it.
No, what I do know is, though, that almost every reputable organization in the world that's watching this is saying that Israel is carrying out a deliberate campaign of starvation in the occupied Gaza Strip, systematically destroying the health, well-being, and the social fabric of the Palestinian people, ridding themselves of the Palestinian people. Amnesty International. I could quote so many of them. What do you say to these? What do you say to these organizations, my friend Mordecai?
First of all, check who is sponsoring Amnesty International. So they have to cater to those who bring them the money. Secondly, it was proven time and again that there was no starvation in Gaza. On the contrary, Hamas are stealing the food and sell it to the Gazans with very high price in order to be able to recruit more people in order to continue the jihad against us. And apparently you support them.
I don't support them. I'm a journalist, and I'm telling you what the sources are saying, and I'm quoting the sources.
Well, Amnesty International is the least reliable source on whatever happens here, because show me one good thing that Amnesty ever wrote about Israel. Nothing. You will never find.
Then I guess you'd say the same thing about the World Court and the United Nations.
Check who is sponsoring Amnesty. Well, check who is sponsoring.
Okay, both the UN the World Court have said the same thing. What do you say to them?
Politicized to its core. This court is politicized totally against Israel. And just look at the Human Rights Council. Which has hundreds of decisions against Israel, nothing against Myanmar, nothing against Russia and its war on Ukraine, nothing on Russia and its war on Chechnya, as it was in the 90s, nothing. All of a sudden, only Israel is the pariah state in the world.
Well,
and you believe this?
I will tell you this. Russia's been at war with Ukraine now for something like 2.5 years. Last time I checked, they've killed...
Russia started the war with Ukraine.
Okay, that's fine. We can argue that later. But let me just give you some facts. There's about 11,500 civilians who've died in that conflict as a result of what Russia's done. Israel has only been at war, I guess, with the Palestinians for something like a year and a half, if that, and they've already taken out close to 70,000 to 80,000 people, including 17,000 children.
Did you count?
So
did you count?
I don't have to count. Look at pictures, sir.
Pictures never show you 70,000.
Yes, that's the official.
This figure comes from Hamas.
That's the official count, by the way. Yes, just to answer your question respectfully.
Nobody with official position counted the casualties. All the numbers are coming from Hamas, and they don't make any difference between civilians and fighters of Hamas. We are trying to target the fighters, but they are hiding behind their wives and their children. So what do you want us to do?
Okay, let me read to you now from some folks in Israel who are being very critical of what the Netanyahu government is doing. I'd like to get...
Of course, because of politics.
Well, yeah, but let me get a chance to read it to you, and then you tell me if they're full of crap or not.
Okay.
I know them. They're probably friends of yours. Let me start with this one. Here's a Zionist military analyst, Amir Oren. He writes, even if the assassination...
He writes in Haaretz.
Yes.
He's a good friend of mine. He writes in Haaretz, and he couldn't say one good word about the government.
Even if the assassination, he's still, we're allowed to hear his opinion. So you can knock him down. Let me read it to our audience first. Even if the assassination were successful, it would still be a failure, because a self-respecting state cannot act with such recklessness. Even the Mossad had reservations about this operation. He's talking about what the Netanyahu government just did in Doha. Is he right? Is he wrong? What do you think?
First of all, Israel proved that whoever acts against Israel should bear the consequences. You cannot act against us and sleep peacefully in your bed. Therefore, we attacked Hamas. We attacked Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon. We attacked the Houthis in Yemen, those who are launching missiles against us and actually stopped the traffic, the naval traffic in the Red Sea. Do you have any explanation to this?
No, but these are different cases. You're mixing apples and oranges, and I don't think that's very fair. We're talking about attacking a country who is simply inviting people who seem to be your opposition. The Qataris are not necessarily, you attacked the Qatar, you bombed Qatar, sir. That's very different than attacking the Houthis because they attacked you.
My dear friend.
Okay.
We attacked a building where the Palestinians were in order to target the Palestinians.
But it's not your building. It's not your country, and it does not belong to Hamas. It belongs to Qatar. If every country goes around attacking every other country they're mad at because an enemy of theirs happens to be staying overnight there, we'd be in a hell of a crappy world, wouldn't we?
If there are terrorists like ISIS, don't they deserve to be killed? Are you defending ISIS?
You negotiated with the Qataris to negotiate with them. How in the world can you then turn around and kill them?
No. And by the way, the Qataris...
What am I missing?
So innocent, according to your presentation, are actually those who sponsored Hamas for many years.
Because you asked them to. Because Netanyahu told them to sponsor them. He literally gave them the green light to back Hamas.
Again, you are mixing between myth and effects.
Okay.
They were smuggling big amounts of money, cash money, through the tunnels from Egypt. And this Netanyahu never told them to do. By the way, the money which Qatar gave Hamas, according to Netanyahu's request, was in order to buy food in Israel. So we actually fed the Gazans, and they attacked us in such a vicious way on October 7th. Again, you tend to forget it. However, Qatar supports Hamas. Qatar supports anti-Semitism all over the world. Qatar supports Islamism in many countries in Europe and in America. And this Islamism, as you know, is also accompanied by terror as well. And if you have a short memory, I'll remind you about the terror attacks in Europe, which were perpetrated by people who got money from Qatar.
You know what? I grew up in Miami. I probably grew up with around more Jews than you. That's how many of my friends that I grew up with in South Florida are Jewish. You know, you've probably been to Miami. It's a great place and a great community. Played basketball with my kids at the JCC, the Jewish Community Center. My quarterback in high school was a Jewish kid. I used to go to his mom's house every day and eat everything that loved Jewish food, by the way. So I've got an affinity as an American for everything that is Jewish. And I love the people. And by the way, I love the food. When I went to Israel, I think it's one of the greatest places to eat in the world. But I'm saddened by that what your government, the government of Netanyahu, I don't know if you claim it or not, is doing is making the world a really crappy place for my friends. I think the world is going to hold Israel account in many ways, because the world seems to think, and I read this in every country I go to, that Israel is overreaching. Do you not even possibly see the potential for that?
Of course I see. Look, I do go like every other month to speak in all kinds of countries, including Miami. However, here in the Middle East, and you don't live in the Middle East.
No, you're right.
The way to survive in the Middle East is to be strong, to be deterring, and to be dangerous. Otherwise, it is the end of you. Here in the Middle East, only power is appreciated, and deterrence is achieved, as you know, by warning. And when you direct a credible threat to your enemies, they respect you. And this is the Middle East. This is not America here. This is not Europe here. Here is the region where only the powerful, only the brave can survive. We learned it with the years. After all, we came from the Holocaust when we were as far as could be from brave. But in order to survive on our forefathers' land, we have to be strong. And we have to teach our neighbors that if they mess with us, it will be the end of them. And we showed even those in Qatar, yes, in Qatar, the terror-supporting country, yes, the terror-supporting country which is aligned with Iran. Iran is doing it, and Qatar is sponsoring it. This is the difference between these two countries who are in bed with each other. And this is what is happening. And you apparently, since you apparently live in Moscow, as far as could be from the Middle East, I wish that the atmosphere in the Middle East would be like in Moscow. But unfortunately, this is the most miserable area in the world. Look at Libya. Look at Sudan. Look at Yemen. Look at Syria. Look at Lebanon. There is not even one normal country in the Middle East apart from the Emirates. Hmm. And this, in this volcano, which we live in this crater of this volcano, we should survive.
I understand your position, and you defend your position well. And my job is to challenge
you. Thank you so much.
My job is to challenge you. I feel like, you know, I have arguments like this with my family and my brothers as well. So I hope you don't take it personally. But
No. I thank you for posing these questions and allowing me to answer them, because in many other media outlets, they don't even let answer.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No, God bless. Thank you so much, Mordecai. And I appreciate your time. And I, like everybody else, wishes that this thing can come to some kind of peaceful resolution.
I also wish.
Soon. Yeah.
We pray for peace. We pray for peace. But, you know, if you want peace, you have to be very, very much prepared for a war.
Let's do this again. Let's do this again. Let's have more conversations. I think that we find solutions when we talk, not when we ignore
each
other.
Whenever you like, except for Yom Shabbat, I'm with you.
And maybe we'll get together in Miami one day and sit out by the beach and have some coffee or something. Take care, my friend. See you later. Bye-bye.
Good.
What a conversation, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think or what to say, because I almost feel like, you know, I put on my journalism hat every day and I try to ask the right questions and I try to do my research. But so much of this story, so much of what I was just talking about with Mordecai, goes beyond journalism in so many ways. It's really about the human experience. A lot of talk about, you know, attacking and hating and these people are bad and these people are good. And I can't help but think that at some point, as a Christian, which happens to be the religion I grew up in as a Catholic, that I learned about love. And I just don't hear that word anymore. What happened to it? What happened about to loving thy neighbor? What happened about looking for solutions through peace and love instead of aggression? Because it almost seems like when I have conversations with either side about these things, it's about aggression, and it's not about love. It's about hate, and it's about war, and, you know, damn it to hell, I almost wish to hell that somehow we can find a way beyond that. And I guess the way we do it is to just ask the hard questions and understand somebody else's perspective. And maybe somewhere in the middle, we'll find it, you know?